also get a detailed report on the establishment of the two universities in the province of Mpumalanga and the Northern Cape. We will start with a presentation on the universities and thereafter go to the presentation on the performance of the department. I'll take this opportunity to allow the department to proceed with their presentations as they have directed. Members will introduce themselves as they speak to save time. I know that last time I introduced them, this is Queenie is coming from KwaZulu-Natal, and she's from Gauteng. How are you, members? I must correct that for the record this morning. Can I take this opportunity to permit the department to proceed with their presentation? When you are next to a mic, make sure that before you speak, your cell phone is off. If it is on silent, when it rings, it affects recordings. So let's switch off our cell phones or put them on a flight mode and so on. I don't know whether on that mode you'll be able to receive calls or receive things. If it is more advanced to be able not to interact with our recorders, it will be fine. Morning, Dr. Panjan.
Thank you very much, Chairman. Good morning to the honorable members of the Portfolio Committee and everybody in the meeting. Chairman, as your instruction, we are here today on the first quarter performance report, which is stretching over a period of 3 months from the 1st of April 2012 to 30th of June 2012. The presentation outlined basically to just see an overview of the first quarter performance and the notable achievements program as well as the budget performance, as all these programs are driven mainly by the budget. Now, if you look on the overview of the first quarter performance, which is ending June 2012, the predetermined targets were 22. We thought then it would be important to actually give succinctly the breakdown in regard to the status of all these targets. Now, if you look at the presentation, 10 targets, which is about 45% of 22, have been achieved quite well in advance without any problem whatsoever. And 10 targets, which is also 45, were still in the implementation phase. So all this started quite very well and they progressed. But in terms of completion, there were objective minor delays that overlapped to the first month of the second quarter, but we quite precisely as of the 30th of June, what was the status. Now, they are all done at the present moment. Now, two targets, which is 10%, are proving not to be achievable, and mainly to budget constraints. We are still engaged in that regard with the Treasury, but as of now, the things were still not the same. So that 10% or two targets haven't been achieved. Now, the overall performance, this is the pictorial depiction of what I've outlined, basically. The green, which is the 45%, that was achieved without any delay, without any problem. And the amber, it's where there were just minor glitches that were overcome in due course. And the red is the area I spoke about, which hasn't been achieved at all due to financial constraints. And if you go over, the graph is actually showing the predetermined target, which were 22, and the green again showing that 45% and the amber as well. The other two supposed to be red, not amber as well, because that one hasn't been achieved at all. But substantial explanation will be given when we're dealing with the group. I would request each DDT to take us through per program so that we could be appraised as to what were the critical challenges per each program in the performance of the department. I will ask Ms. Lula Mambob, who is the DDT for Corporate Services, to take us through.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, DJ. My presentation will be on Program 1, which is a corporate services branch. If I were to report on the quarterly targets, within this quarter, we had a target of reaching 15% in respect to vacancy rate, and we have made tremendous progress in respect to that, wherein 25 posts were filled during the period under review, and that has reduced our vacancy rate from 36% to 20.5%. There is an ongoing process in the department to meet the target of 15% within the second this quarter that we are in at the moment. We have since advertised 48 posts in the department for filling during the second quarter. We have appointed 87 interns for the 2012-13 financial year, which is a significant contribution towards youth development and job creation. Our target is 100. We will be filling the 13 remaining posts as the interns that are still in the department a move after their 12-month internship program. In respect to the website, Chairperson, our target is that we should have the website 24 hours, 7 days a week. The website should be functional, rather, and we should have produced a newsletter, which is online. We have met the target of improving the website, and there's ongoing work in the department to make better enhancements to make it more user-friendly and easy to access with more information for the users of the website. However, our newsletter is not yet online, and during this quarter, we are working towards making the newsletter online. We also had a target of having exhibitions, 8 exhibitions, the annum 2 per quarter. I want to report that during the quarter under question, we had 2 major exhibitions in the department. That the first one was a budget vote, where we had an exhibition here in Parliament. We also had a very big and successful event, the Nelson Mandela Career Festival, which was planned during the quarter that we're reporting on. And as part of ensuring an efficient and effective system of financial management, the department has managed to process requests for transfers and payments within 5 days of receipt. Other notable achievements, Chairperson, would include the approval of 6 supply chain management and logistical services policies, which includes the telephone policy, acquisition and management of cellular phones, 3G cards, and the loss and disposal policy, policy on booking of flights, car rentals, hotel accommodation with the appointed travel agents, the supply chain management policy, and the transport policy. This is over and above the 19 policies that were already developed in the previous financial year. Now, Chairperson, in respect to the actual number of targets that were achieved, we had 8 targets for this quarter, and we have achieved 4 of those, which is 4%. 2 of them are in progress, and 2 of them could not be achieved. And one of those targets that could not be achieved is in the main, the disciplinary cases. The target is that we should be able to complete or finalize disciplinary cases within 90 days. As reported, Chairperson, under challenges, disciplinary cases could not be finalized within the prescribed time frame due mainly to the postponement as per the decisions of the presiding officers, as well as the availability of key witnesses in some of the cases. And this is really the presiding officer would decide at the request of the affected employees. And the department has no control or has very, very limited control over those decisions. The second area is in respect to IT services, the availability of IT services. Our target was that we should have IT services for 24 hours, 7 days a week. Our current performance in the first quarter is 20 hours, 6 days a week. There is undergoing work in the department to improve this performance. However, I do want to mention that the major reason for this is the external connectivity at CETA due to the size of the broadband output. The second one would be the issue of the cable theft at Olifantsfontein, where Indela is located. It then affects our ability to meet that target. Lastly, Chairperson, I do want to raise the issue of the filling of vacancies. The current assessment by the presidency is that the department is able to fill vacancies within four months and 9 days, which is 4.9, instead of the 4 months that has been set. However, the national average is 4.7 in respect to it. But I do want to say that we have a huge problem in respect to lack of funding to fill vacancies overall in the department. There are notable capacity constraints as well in the human resource unit in terms of expertise and knowledge, which do impact negatively on our ability to serve the department. We are dealing with this, Chairperson, by putting people in terms in respect to, you know, performance management. But as mentioned earlier on, we have advertised about 48 posts in order to meet our target. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Can we process problem one?
Thank you, Chairperson.
I'm reporting on Program 2, Human Resource Development Planning, Monitoring and Coordination. My name is Feroz Patel. In this quarter, we had three targets.
I didn't want to interrupt the president. I've got two documents. I'm trying to synchronize the two. The one the reference, the other one, the multi-track one. I was lost in the course of the presentation, trying to look at the two documents.
Get it from the horse.
Okay, let's do it this way. Let's deal with program one. There's presentation corporate services, dispose of it, then go to program two. Let's proceed. Members can then engage the presentation. In terms of clarifying questions, comments, and
thank you, Chair. We have to introduce ourselves, as you said, as well. I'm Annelie Lottert, member of the committee. Chair, I would just like to find out, in terms of the challenges in Program 1, reference was made to capacity constraints in the Human Resources Unit. I just find it quite worrying that in that particular unit, which deals with human resources, that it is said that there's a lack of expertise and knowledge. How does that happen? How were those people appointed in the first instance that they now have to be put on terms? Then secondly, is there an indication of how many disciplinary cases are still outstanding due to this the presiding officers not continuing or postponing it? And then thirdly, in terms of the external connectivity at CETA, is it a CETA problem or does the problem lie within the department? Where's the solution? Thank you.
Is that the only question on this program?
Can I go back?
Let me allow Banga then to follow.
Okay.
Mine is on your intakes. I'm very interested to know. It's a good program that relates to youth development, which I'm interested, but I want to know how many out of these intakes are coming from FET colleges.
You'll excuse my confusion here. I've got this document. At the extreme end, there are some eyes there. You know, when an
9. The first being lack of funding, particularly towards well-filled posts, and all of them being indicated. The expectation, Chair, is that as and when we are informed of the challenges, we should at the same time be informed as to how does the department hope to deal with such challenges. It shouldn't be like there's a challenge and that's it. We are here, want to be given hope that these challenges somewhat will be dealt with. Is there any sign of the department at some point having the capacity to fill these positions, or rather to deal with the challenges as outlined there?
And also on still on page 9, you have that disciplinary cases could not be finalized within the prescribed time frame due to postponements. I must be missing that one, the type of disciplinary cases and which ones could not be completed because of postponements, and what the status of those disciplinary cases is as we talk now. Thanks.
The community has already come to this, but I just want to understand the filling of the cases, the lack of funding. Did the department not budget for filling these vacancies?
Let's clarify those questions. But for the future, what the committee says is that when you report on disciplinary cases, make sure that if we are called to a press conference, we can just refer to the same document to clarify the issues, to say that there were 10 disciplinary cases, one for fraud, one for theft, one for absenteeism, one for insubordination, two people dismissed, others, two people return warning, and reprimand, so that we are clear as to what is going on, you know. That's all we are saying. That's all we are saying. I don't think we can hammer, we can kill a mosquito with a sledgehammer, as the judge said in your judgment.
Thank you, Chen. On the question of the lack of expertise and knowledge, the question was how the affected colleagues, the appointed. Chairperson, appointments in the department follow the normal processes within, you know, the public service, wherein colleagues are invited for interviews, they are interviewed, we subject them to competency assessments, and the outcomes of the assessments, you know, come positive. Then it's only when people are actually on a job where it then gets proven that something is lacking in respect to a specific field. So what I'm saying is that we did follow normal selection processes, and the colleagues performed and excelled in an interview process, which in most cases is the procedure that is used, you know, throughout both the public and the private sector. We also, all over and above that, subject to people to competency assessment, as it is a requirement within the public service for people to go through that. As I said earlier on, we are managing this as management. But what also complicates issues further, Chairperson, is that during the split of the Department of Education, there was a 48-52 split in respect to corporate corporate services in general, as well as planning, with DHET getting 48% of capacity in corporate services. And that capacity has never been, replenished so that we are at 100% capacity due to reasons I've mentioned earlier on in respect to lack of funding. In respect to disciplinary cases, we managed eight cases, and I can give details if I'm required, but five of the cases are the Indlela cases, and all five of them had to be postponed. Those are the Indlela cases. With the last sitting, there was actually a request from the union to deal with them as a collective or as a group because they belong to the same union. And when the hearing set, there was then a request from the employee representative that they didn't have enough documentation for them to proceed with the hearing. There was then a postponement. The three are at head office. One of the cases was in respect to extensive absenteeism without authorization. The second one was abscondment, and the last one was on fraud and theft. And in all those three cases, we've had requests for postponement. In respect to the CETA problems, yes, indeed, the issue of the broadband is a CETA problem. It's not a departmental issue. However, the matter is receiving the attention of CETA. But I did also mention that the issue of the theft of cables is a big problem at Indlela, and we are looking at the wireless connectivity for Indlela in particular. Whether some of the interns are FET college interns, yes, honorable member and chairperson, we do have interns from FET colleges, but I do want to say that we really do not treat any of the interns separately. For us, they are all interns. In respect to lack of funding to fill posts, what are we doing about it? Chairperson, let me just say that the department has a total of 849 funded posts. With the approved establishment of 1,067 posts. Now, the difference between that is unfunded posts. The department has managed to fill 900 of the 849 funded posts, which means that we've had to find funding from within the department and shifting some funds in order to improve the capacity of the department. We have been making a request from National Treasury for additional funding to improve the functionality of the department. However, we haven't managed to raise the funding that we require for the entire establishment of the department. So there are indeed attempts within our limited budget to shift funds in order to increase our capacity. I've already dealt with the question of the cases that were postponed. All eight cases were postponed during the quarter that we're reporting on. I think I've dealt with all the questions. Mr. Patel is going to explain the template, the colors in the template.
Employees. You said that you've got 25 policies.
adopted, since this is a performance, we thought you would be having those with you to prove that indeed you've got those approved policies existing in the department for the portfolio committee to note as a portfolio of evidence that indeed this department has got this number of policies. When we go there, we already engage with them and never breach them as society, you see. We will request you to find those approved policies. You said that you already had 19 policies, and these ones are the ones that have been approved. I think we are thankful for the presentation. Can we proceed to program two?
But you see the question I was asking. I asked that question deliberately. And it's unfortunate that from the response, I don't find the passion that we have, saying that we are shifting towards redirecting our students to further education and training. When I consistently ask this question from the department, because the department should be the first one who committed to recruiting more students from FHA. You must be the first people who walk the talk. Now, if you say we have some, to me, a minute number of those people, I need those details to say in what people you are recruiting, particularly this intent, you must show that commitment that 2030 further education could be an option of choice for us today. Because it speaks to issues of employability or employability for people who enroll in FHA colleges. Therefore, the passion and the love for FHA, you must see it from you. It must not be a by-the-way thing. Therefore, I'm still very interested, ma'am, even if you can provide to me directly that information, to what extent are you committed, even to those intent, in terms of taking students from FHA. It might be two, the sum, out of 87.
Yeah, I feel that is a good point. Let's proceed to program two, and I think the answer to the question of Mbonyana will be covered.
Thank you, Chairperson. That document, title reference, is for the information of members, because this actually contains the full APP strategic objectives, the performance indicators, etc. But those colors that are referring to, unfortunately, we have this in black and white. So how to read those eyes or those faces? If it's smiling, you are happy. If it's angry, then you are not pleased. And if it's a straight line, it's amber. And or another way to look at it is, if it's light colored, then it's neutral. If it's dark, I don't know if your shows it, it's angry. And if it's in the middle, it's being happy. So that's just the symbols. Unfortunately, the legend was in color. Chairperson, I'm going to report on program two, which deals with planning, monitoring, coordination. For this particular quarter, there were three targets. Two of the targets have been fully achieved, and one target has been delayed. 90% complete, but 10% delay. The notable achievements in regards to these targets for this particular quarter is that the performance monitoring on the implementation of the VHET annual performance plan continued under review. And Chairperson, the evidence is before you on the table. Part of the whole issue is the collection of the report and this process, including this process of today, led up to that. So the progress report has been compiled for National Treasury, the Presidency, as well as today's report. In regards to our intentions of monitoring and supporting actions needed to implement the statutory functions, Jefferson, if you remember that in the strategic plan, the department indicated that it was not having a very close arm's length, not arm's length, a close relationship with its entities such as South African Qualifications Authority, the Higher Education Quality Committee, UMALUSI, as well as the Quality Council for Trade and Occupation. The department took a strategic decision to actually appoint a director that is called NQF coordination in order to coordinate the quality assurance processes and to guide and assist the entities in the implementation of the new NQF, which was quite radically different from the SACWA acts that it replaced. So the branch dealt with all queries on advice that was required either by the minister, the director general, or by the entities themselves in regards to quality assurance processes. The most important one was that the minister, in terms of the act, issued guidelines to SACWA and the quality councils to make certain that they deal decisively with the issue of articulation as well as with recognition of prior learning. Chairperson, with the establishment of the QCTO, there were also transitional measures and a number of processes had to be shifted. If you remember, CETAs were ETQAs and that function shifted to the QCTO. So in regards to that, all processes were covered. Some of the other highlights that are actually highlights but not in terms of the specific targets was the international relations processes, which is also managed by this branch. But it is in the slide. I'm not going to go through that detail because they're not specifically talking to the three targets. In regards to the social cohesion, this is again just an achievement. In order to advocate the celebration of significant days in our calendar, our national calendar, national public holidays, as well as other significant days declared from time to time by departments, for example, Water Day, or Tree Planting Day, or the Women's Month, or Youth Month. And this advocacy plan has been sent to universities for them to give us a report on how do they build social cohesion. This also includes, for example, the Africa Day and Days and Weeks and the United Nations declarations. In regards to the EMBA, in that particular deliverable, we aimed to have completed in the first quarter our MTEF bid. However, we completed the detail of the bidding, but the National Treasury has completely changed the bidding process. Where previously we dealt on a one-to-one with the National Treasury, they have now introduced what is called functional clusters. We, together with the Department of Basic Education, Department of Sports, Recreation, as well as Department of Arts and Culture, now form part of those functional groupings. We have met with National Treasury twice, and we will be submitting our bid in terms of the new guidelines. Thank you very much.
Various countries to be able to optimize our participation in the knowledge economy globally. We really think in the next report, give us an idea as to what are the challenges related to that. And in the event that there are declarations or agreements, as alluded to in your report, let's have those avail the committee so that we know what agreements do we have with whose countries and so on, so that we are able to see how we are responding to those agreements.
Chair. I would just like to ask, in connection with the NQF director that has been appointed, if I remember correctly, at a meeting we had with the QCTO, one of the problems that were raised was the whole question of overlapping between Umalusi functions and the QCTO. Has that been sorted? Will this be the function of this director? And then also in terms of, on page 14, the department's oversight on the quality councils, and that you're now developing, or you have developed a monitoring instrument, I think there's also a problem not only in terms of the quality councils, but also data collection from the CETAs themselves. Do you also have that as part of your activities? And could you just report on that? Thank you.
The shifting of funds, what implications is the shifting of funds to fund vacancies have on blend programs?
So, for example,
The Russians had just made some scholarships available. However, they do not pay for the air tickets for the students to go over to Russia and to return. And we have then supplemented those resources as a department through the National Skill Fund, because it is within the skills area. Jefferson, you've asked previously also for the agreement. I must say that they are in process. They have been compiled, and you should be getting that package from the last report soon. Jefferson, in regards to the NQF and the meeting with the QCTO in Umalusi, yes, there are overlaps. What we should know is that the National Qualifications Framework Act, which replaced or repealed the SEQA Act, completely changed the whole terrain of quality assurance. If you remember, there were standards generation bodies and committees, etc. Thirdly, there was a division in terms of the way education under the Department of Education and Training was dealt with, and the way that skills development was dealt with under the Department of Labor. So we are really in an implementation phase of a whole new structural arrangement. As part of that new NQF, we are required, the Minister is required to determine three sub-frameworks. And what those sub-frameworks do, it indicates to the Higher Education and Quality Committee, this is your terrain, or this is your jurisdiction. And the same thing in terms of Umalusi and the QCTO. Currently, the Minister has published those three frameworks for public comments. The comments have come in. The South African Qualifications Authority has been asked to provide advice to the Minister in terms of the NQF Act, and that is in process. But basically, the issue between QCTO and Umalusi was on current existing programs and qualifications. So, for example, before the establishment of the QCTO, the technical programs N1, N2, N3, N4, 5, 6, and the N-Diploma were quality assured between Umalusi and the department. With the establishment of the QCTO, SEQA has made an interim allocation that N1, N2, N3 be quality assured by Umalusi, because it is equivalent to the National Senior Certificate, and the N4, 5, and 6 program be quality assured by the QCTO. Once these frameworks have been determined, all current qualifications have to be mapped against the three sub-frameworks. The three quality councils have slightly different procedures, and therefore in future any new qualification that has to be preferred has to be matched against which sub-framework it matches. Now, the Higher Education Quality Council is easy. It's level 5 to level 9, but there is going to become jurisdictional issues between the Higher Education Quality Council and QCTO. For example, if the QCTO introduces a qualification. So what the frameworks will do is to find distinctiveness, uniqueness, in terms of that sub-framework, so that there is no confusion. In regards to around the data collection. It's not reported in this quarter, but the strategic plan deals fully with the whole issue of the establishment of a credible institutional skills planning mechanism. Part of that mechanism is not only to ensure that we build the databases of the Quality Council, but including CSAS. We already have databases that are beginning to collect information on the issue of artisans. We're busy with a very big project of which we've just received funding from the National Skills Fund to make sure that the workplace skills plans across CETAs are integrated into one database in order to improve data collection for planning purposes. In terms of social cohesion, that document is on its way to universities. As soon as we receive those reports, in terms of what universities have been doing, we will compile it and share it Thank you, Chairperson. The deadline for completion of the bid process is a departmental deadline, and that was 31st of March. Then there are national treasury processes that happen in the second quarter, so that it is in readiness for the October medium-term budget policy statement of the Minister of Finance. Currently, we have been asked by National Treasury to look at cutting 1% across the board, and once that information is now being undertaken through the Office of the CFO, is to determine which programs we have to find savings in. Once those funds have been determined, we then go into a functional meeting, I think next week with National Treasury, and then all the departments come and they say, this is what our savings are. Then taking all the savings of the three functional committees, we look at new priorities, and there's a determination of where these funds must be applied. So in other words, the savings are aggregated. If education comes up as the highest priority, then it means all the savings within that functional group may come to education. That is a process in the middle of September in which all the functional committees come together and they look at the net savings and where the funds are moved from the security cluster to social cluster or to education. That will be middle September. Then there are processes of National Treasury, like the Minister's Committee on the Budget. They will then sit and deliberate, and finally proposals then will be made to Parliament via the Minister of Finance, and I think the dates are normally October the 26th.
Chair. Sure. Thank you. My understanding of Program 2 is that it is about human resources development, and therefore I want to know how many people have been developed and to what extent have they been developed. Thank you.
Yeah, Chairperson, this title of human resource development is quite deceptive. My colleague, Ms. Lulama Mbobo, is responsible for human resource development of the personnel within the Department of Higher Education and Training. The HRD that is in the title of this program refers to the Human Resource Development Strategy of South Africa, the whole country strategy, as well as the Human Resource Development Council that is chaired by the Deputy President, and the head of the Secretariat is present chair. There hasn't been an indicated target for this quarter, but if Honourable Member would like to have more information, we could revert to Ms. Tombela, who is in the House. The function of this the council is not to physically develop, do human resource development, but is to determine what the blockages are in regards to macro issues around human resource development and to suggest particular ways of dealing with those blockages. But if you wish to call upon for additional information, Ms. Tombela is in the House.
Did I hear correctly? You are responsible for the strategic development for the whole country. That's what I heard. For universities.
For the country.
ngikhulume ngalabo abafunda ngaphandle. Bengifuna ukwazi ukuthi kulabo abathola imali zokufunda ngaphandle. Bayabuya bazothuthukisa izwe lethu. Uma ngabe bengabuyi kuney'nyathelo ezithathayo yini ukuthi babuye bazokwazi ukuthuthukisa izwe lethu.
I'm not an expert in Zulu, but let me say that she says that for those people that are trained outside the country through resources of the state, they come back to contribute to the economy of South Africa. And what action do we take in the event that the student remains abroad in Sweden, Russia, Cuba, and so on? I'm going to still get for my interpretation.
Yeah, no, in regard to that, whenever a student or a group of students is funded from within the coffers of the state to study abroad, that is processed through a contractual agreement between the student as well as government. And one of the obligations on the part of the student is actually to fulfill the terms of the contract, which in the main will always be to plow back the knowledge that one has attained during the course of his or her studies towards graduating. Failing which, there are penalties that would be specified in the contract.
Uthi uma efunda isiteti, uma ethola imali eqashwa mhlawumbe outside the state or kwikhampani ekunika imali xa yofunda ngaphandle, niyakwazi ukuyikhontrola yini leyo ukuthi babuye njengabantu balayikhaya?
No, on that one we don't have a say really. It's a matter which is between an individual and the respective sponsor, and the normal arrangements for studying abroad then would actually apply. But for what we have been funded, we don't have that much say as to what would actually happen.
Can I ask is it a general question or protocol? You know, when you look at our previous, I'm asking this in relation to that broader function that being responsible for development of human strategy for the country. But I'll limit my focus to universities. When you look at our previously disadvantaged universities, you look at the quality of lecturers, because this has been a cry. Do I see the strategy there to develop those lecturers to the same level to previously advantaged universities? Or is my question misplaced? I may not be understanding exactly what the whole thing entails. Tell me if I'm out of order there. But this has been a notable concern.
Thank you very much for that question. I think it's an important council. The Human Resource Development Council, it's a multi-stakeholder structure composed by the Deputy President, who is chairing it. It encompasses all sectors across. Business is there, professionals from FET colleges, vice chancellors and other academics in there, experts from research institutions. So there are quite a number of issues that get threshed out there, including the kind and the quality of programs that should actually be offered in the post-school education and training system and other mechanisms that are available for training, that is, state-owned enterprises as well, including the private sector, and how that should actually be quality assured. So the question then of both the quality of teaching and learning and the outcomes thereof receives the attention and interrogation, and where there are challenges and blockages, they would actually propose some mechanisms to unlock those blockages. So it's all encompassing, it's looking at all these matters. And one of the issues that it was actually put to the department to look at, amongst others, as to how do we go about awarding professorships to academics. It's a tricky question, but we are looking at that, because others are having a view that this may be something which is done relatively easy, or should it be accompanied by really certain stringent measures that would actually be benchmarked in terms of the international standard that is, would be required to have so many publications before you become a professor. Are you then supposed to become a professor without a single publication? And if so, it would be for what, on which basis? So those questions are actually interrogated there, and there are suggestions they are putting forward to various components that have to deal with those matters. Thank you.
Chair, I was promised an answer, but let me say we were informed here that the department has about 900 people employed by it. But if it develops beyond that 900, I would be interested as well as to how many people beyond that 900 have been developed and to what extent.
I know that question was problem one. I'll permit problem one to answer. No, that's fine, honorable member. It's program one. Let's allow them to answer.
Thank you, Chairperson. Can I say that we do not have the actual figures in terms of the development of staff within the department, but we do have a number of programs that are based on their personal development plans, and throughout the year we subject them through training, including the interns. But I do want to say that we have already subjected all the 87 interns through a very intensive a program which includes the induction program as well as just acquainting themselves with government in general. We have senior managers, we have gone through professional development programs as well through the University of Pretoria, but we can provide the exact figures in respect to that. Thank you.
Can I just say that the tools we are having in terms of developing staff which is in the employ of the department. One is the study policy, which mitigates the mechanisms of how an employee would pursue his or her studies towards occupational qualifications of this sort or the other sort, or improving on the career that one is having. There is policy. Secondly, there is also bursary by the department to actually support those who want to pursue their studies management system of government has got a developmental aspect per employee. Out of working the performance agreement with each and every employee, there is always a determination by an employee as to what areas one would like to be developed at. And on those basis, we actually work with Palama and other institutions for those specific areas of development that are actually identified by an employee himself or herself. But then I suppose the question which is being asked is, what are the numbers that we are talking about? And I think that breakdown can actually be provided in due course because it is available. But that is the approach and the mechanism we use in order to train, develop, as well as assist employees to study in order to further their study whilst they are still at work. Thank you.
Chairperson, if you allow me, I do want to just make reference to the previous financial year. Just for the benefit of the committee in terms of the actual numbers. We trained or we took 18 senior managers for skills development programs. Those were level 13 to 16. We also have educators at middle management level, assistant directors and deputy directors. We took 77 of those to training programs. Officers and clerks, level 4 to 8, we had 82, and the cleaners, messengers, food services, aides, and security guards, we took 6 of them to training. We also took 41 interns to specific skills development programs. That gives us a total of 224. We, in this current financial year, again, we have programs along the similar lines as the DG has explained. Thank you.
Yeah, those would be the last hands because there was process.
Okay, the first one, Chair, you see what now is being, you see, DG, what this means is you are tabling. There are very poor instruments that you have to assist and build capacity. And what the DDG has said, that with all that what you have done, providing the framework and the tools, but you still continue to have serious capacity problems, meaning the programs and the support you are giving to staff is not assisting in addressing problems we have. You might not have been addressing the problem she was telling us about, that in terms of program one, lack of funding and capacity to the human resource. The problem is there. There's something wrong that we are not doing well. Or the staff that is supposed to be doesn't want to become abafuna ufunda in the course. They don't want to learn. You see, it becomes a problem then. You see, when it's the Department of Higher Education, people in higher education who do not want to capacitate and build themselves, they have a problem. Because they are the very same people who are supposed to be giving support to institutions, but the very same, they don't want to go to school. Now, if they don't want to go to school, except in higher education, you see, there's a place somewhere they're supposed to be. You see, it's your problem, it has been your problem throughout in higher education. Even some of us, when we're in institutions, arrive, the same people who are supposed to give you capacity, you capacitate themselves. They are brought to you, say, we've deployed these people to give you capacity. They don't even understand higher education themselves. That's where that problem comes. You have programs people who do not want to learn. Now, you have to do something about those things. You can't have people who do not want to capacitate themselves at the expense of the population of the Republic of South Africa. Therefore, that part, I think we should address it in that particular fashion. There must be a plan. There must be a plan.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I'm looking at page 15, that table on page 15. I'm not very good at reading graphs,
number of targets not achieved zero, but to go to your extreme right, number of targets implemented failed 33%. Number of targets achieved 67. How do you reconcile that rating? Am I reading your graph correctly?
No. Can't it mean that the aggregate of the targets for this quarter are under implementation? At various stages towards achievement.
I'm happy that my chairperson is a legal person. Legal rule not to leave any loopholes. We have to be exact. What does it mean exactly?
I'm sure that is what it might suggest. Because it says number achieved, number being implemented. So the unachieved is part of the implemented. That's why there's zero non-achievement, but it's fine. Let's proceed. I don't think we're stuck there. I understand the way it is. Let's say that we appreciate the efforts for training members of society. It's not necessarily for training them to work in South Africa, unless we don't understand the concept of knowledge economy. For instance, we have had very positive news in the media that there is cutting-edge research on finding a cure for TB, a cure for malaria. That is going to have a major impact in the pharmaceutical industry internationally, and it's been done in South Africa. Of course, I do know that the key people there are not necessarily South Africans. The other one is from Switzerland, the other one is from Namibia, and so on. But those are our people, you know. It's our research. We are happy for that. And we just hope that in the future, there could just even be more indigenous people being able to be at that level of intellectual presence and research intensity and so on. So I think let's go to program 3.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. In terms of Program 3, you will notice that there were no specific quarterly targets in the annual performance plan. Most of the targets for Program 3, in fact, in the annual performance plan are annual targets. So when you look at that, you will note that as we go through the quarterly report, what we are going to be doing is just speaking to progress with respect to specific projects which are working towards developing and ensuring that those annual targets are met. In terms of some of the notable process matters that are underway at the moment and that we're working on, the first one is with respect to the development of the National Information and Application Service for the system. And this particular service is now being looked at. There's a steering committee that's overseeing that process for the development of it, and a technical team has been set up to assist with the conceptualization of an integrated IT system specifically that will be required. Now what we're doing here specifically is ensuring that as the end state is imagined, we bring in a coordinated system that will include a career advice service as well as the NISFAS IT system, so that in the end we have the kind of system that's going to serve the population well and that will lead to improved access to higher education. In terms of the two new universities, significant progress has also been made, and I'm not going to talk about that now because there is going to be a specific presentation with respect to that later. We've also, by the end of the first quarter, transferred fair amount of funds to our universities and public entities to ensure that they're able to do their work well. The figures shown here are actually in percentages, but later on there is a table which indicates some of those actual numbers. But perhaps just to indicate that 49.5% of the budget has been transferred to universities. This covers around 10.2 billion in terms of the block grants, and then the rest is in terms of infrastructure funding, multi-campus grants, and so on. Some of those aspects where institutions have reported and we have specific programs that we are funding. In terms of regulation of the system, new reporting regulations for public higher education institutions are ready for publication in the Government Gazette for public comment. They have been provided to the Minister. The Minister is considering those, and they will be gazetted fairly soon for public comment. The Funding Review Committee's work is ongoing. That work has been very substantial, but we are coming to the point at which the actual report is being developed. The draft report had been started on at the end of the first quarter. We expect that draft report to be ready by the end of September, and the final report to be published once the Minister has considered it in October. In terms of the foundation provisioning policy, which is also looking at providing access with success, we have reviewed the policy for 2013-14. This policy has been approved by the Minister. It has been communicated to all institutions, and institutions are busy with their proposals for new foundation provisioning programs that will be implemented in the following year. The policy on internationalization of higher education, there's a process that's underway in terms of developing this. This is specifically with respect to issues around joint degrees and shared degrees, which is an area that is becoming more notable in the system and that we need to have a policy on. In terms of the infrastructure funding process and the projects that are underway, there is an amount over the three-year MTEF of approximately $6 billion, which will be utilized for improved infrastructure across the system. Part of that is specifically earmarked for improving our historically disadvantaged institutions' infrastructure, the majority going to student housing and infrastructure backlogs. What has happened thus far, and by the end of June, all institutions have provided indications of their plans and what they required funding for. We received bids of around $14 billion, which is quite significantly more than the amount that's available in the system. However, a process has been undertaken in which we are mapping the system so that we can understand how we can improve all the infrastructure across the system to develop quality infrastructure at all our institutions over the longer term. And we'll be looking at three-year planning cycles in terms of being able to do that. The projects should be ready for approval by the end of September. In terms of research development and teaching development grants, a significant issue has been the development of new criteria in terms of how these grants will be provided to institutions. Previously, there were no clear criteria around the grants, but now we are indicating very specifically to institutions what we will support in relation to these grants to ensure that this funding is utilized for the purpose. In other words, developing our academics in terms of research and also in terms of teaching development. The draft policy on qualifications for vocational education lecturers has been finalized for public comment, that had gone to the minister at the end of the first quarter. He has now approved that for publication, and it should be gazetted this week. In terms of initial teacher education, the foundation phase teacher education project is having a major effect. 20 out of 21 universities offering initial teacher education are involved in this project, and there has been a real improvement in the terms of African Language Foundation phase teacher education students. I know that this particular item doesn't give a clear indication of how many students are involved, but in terms of the increases in enrollments in foundation phase teacher education, these increased from an amount of 10,073 in 2009 to 13,630 in 2011, which is quite a significant increase, and we expect greater increases due to the support that we are giving to the system. This project has had a number of significant outputs. There are 13 research and development projects underway across the 20 universities. There have been 33 journal publications. 24 new academics have been employed in the institutions that haven't offered foundation phase teacher education before, and those are all involved in development projects, and particularly in qualifications to ensure that they are properly prepared to take on this process. Altogether, the project is supporting 4 honours students, 34 master's students, and 39 PhDs in foundation phase teacher education in order to develop the system. A journal has also been established, as well as a research association in foundation phase teacher education. In terms of other work that we do related to the evaluation of qualifications for employment in education, there has been a major problem with respect to fraudulent qualifications being presented to the department, and a process has had to, we've had to look at a process for how we understand how to deal with it, and so together with DBSA and SACWA, we are looking at this issue on how to deal with fraudulent qualifications. In terms of challenges for the branch, staffing constraints are a challenge. And although at the end of the first quarter, one of the critical issues was the number of high-level staff in the branch. But to just indicate that since then, 4 directors' posts have been advertised, and we are about to shortlist those, and hopefully we will get that human resource capacity in the branch soon. In terms of the challenges that we experience within the higher education system, relating to weak corporate governance at some universities, this is an issue that is ongoing that we are looking at. And related to this is the issue of institutions under administration, and also the issue of possible new changes to the Higher Education Act that we'll have to deal with in terms of ensuring that we're able to better manage the system. There are a few other challenges related to the data from the HEMIS reporting, and this is specifically linked to some institutions that aren't meeting the deadlines, which does mean that we end up with delays in the final dissemination of statistics for the sector, although we do hope to meet the next quarter target in terms of the reporting that has been provided. The reporting on building space is really the one that we have the most difficulty with, but we're working on that with our institutions. I think that brings us to the end of the report. Thank you.
Chair, thank you for the report. I think it addresses most of the issues that we wanted to know. I just want to express concern about the infrastructure of universities. And maybe the question on your page 19, which you stated that there are proposals for the infrastructure projects in line. in our oversights, we have really come across situations where infrastructure has deteriorated tremendously, and I think if we do not attend to it vigorously, then obviously that is going to be a serious problem. I can refer you to the Walter Sisulu University. I think that is one of the universities which needed really attention. And then the second one is on housing for students. I think that is also a real priority. In most of the areas where we've been, the shortage of student housing, we have addressed it in the past, and I see that there is a budgeted item for it, but I believe that 6 billion, maybe we should get more information on what are the progress, what are the time frames, and how are we going to address the situation. Thank you, Chair.
Numbers increasing, of which I think we need to applaud the government for such. But I would plead, Chairperson, that you get that information, even the numbers, because it does help us even when we are seated in other committees. We need to make use of these, the real numbers that are there, so that you can even see it, how the placements are being done when it comes to that. When you go to the challenges, Chairperson, I know we're talking of university education. Where do you locate the challenge of the student behavior? Does it not fall under this branch where you deal necessarily with the students? We see what is happening in the universities, even when when they are strikes and not the way they behave. I think somehow we need to concentrate on that and see how we best address such issues around the issue of students. Last question around the challenges again. I think ever since we started this term of this chairperson, the challenge of institutions not adhering to the admission dates, and it's a problem. But there is no way where we say, no, I think we are overcoming the challenge. What is it really that is in place? Because for me, I see there are so many institutions that do not really adhere to whatever you say to them. Yes, they can be autonomous and whatever, but there is this part of accountability that whatever time they must be able to account, but they keep on not adhering to whatever dates, submission dates have been put. I might not be sure whether it's one or the same institution, but this is the problem that keeps on coming up. How are you dealing with that one?
I think
foundation phase teacher education.
What is the situation in terms of the teacher training colleges as well? Is there any kind of collaboration with regards to curriculum development for these teachers, etc.? And then on the challenges, Chair, and that is now in terms of the weak governance that we have in the number of institutions under administration. Chair, now I've read in the media, because the Minister had a media conference regarding the situation with CUT and the judgment there. I think it is important that the Portfolio Committee be informed of exactly what the Department's intentions are with regards to this, because a judgment either way will have serious implications for the Department and interventions in future.
Chair, on page 17, on the national, the central registration system, I don't know whether really I there's a gap in terms of what I heard, the budget speech, the pronouncement after the situation in VETs and so on and so on. I want to know really, if I don't know this information at this level, I'm saying to what extent is it confusing students? Any impression to me was created by come January there's a central registration system. System come January. Many politicians know next year central registration system. Many. Now, you see some of these things confused that we make statements. Whilst we're still in conceptualization stage, a person comes and sits there and says, this is what is going to happen. Confuse the nation entirely. Now, I want to know, this confusion, where do I get it? Am I getting it from the department, or am I getting it from what the minister said, or am I getting it from the media? And can you clarify how long this thing will take? This is still going to take years, because if it's conceptualization stage, come next year, January, it's not going to happen. How long will this thing take? Will it be implementable? Is it going to be something that is implementable? Assisting our own universities to run their things? Because I still believe that I'm sitting here. This is not what is going to help South Africa. As long as we are still talking conceptualization, whilst the politician have pronounced that next year it's coming. Therefore, I want to know, just want to understand that.
We are going to have a report on the universities. Okay.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I think the questions are important questions. Just in terms of concern around the infrastructure of universities, the department has the same concern with respect to those institutions where there is really has been insufficient maintenance of facilities, which has led to real infrastructure backlogs. Now, in terms of the program that we're dealing with at the moment, all those institutions have provided us with their needs. So, for example, whilst Sisulu University has indicated it probably needs around about 1.7 billion to meet its backlogs and its needs. Now, given the amount of funding in the system and that we have to deal with every single one of the institutions, it's not going to be possible to provide all of that immediately. But we've already provided some to start dealing with some of the most difficult aspects, particularly the student residences. Now, as we're going through this planning process at the moment, which will be finished by the end of September, we're looking at the needs of every institution and then working out a program for each institution so that we can meet those needs as quickly as possible. More than half of the funding has been set aside very specifically for these historically disadvantaged institutions that have big infrastructure backlogs that will focus on student housing and on other infrastructure backlogs. And then the rest of the funding obviously is also, some of that will be utilized for this. But so the majority of the funding is going to go there over the next three-year period. But we are looking at planning this three-year period with the funds we have, and then the next three-year period in terms of what's coming. In the meantime, there's also been discussions with the PIC to get a pool of funding available to assist universities to fast-track some of that infrastructure development. So this issue is something that's very important and that we will be looking at and working very closely with the universities on. And specifically there is a very important oversight function that the branch has to put in place, and we're doing that. We're also providing those particular universities who haven't done well, and part of why they haven't done well is because they haven't got the expertise on the ground to be able to manage that kind of work. We're providing them with funding to set up project offices, and other universities who are doing well will assist with the development of those project offices so that these institutions over time will develop the capacity to maintain their infrastructure and also manage the infrastructure projects on the ground. In terms of the NISFAS challenge, I must say NISFAS is a major challenge. Not NISFAS, the funding is a major challenge for our students. We have very many more students who require funding than is available in the NISFAS budget. So if we look at the work that we've done so far on the fee-free education group, which is looking specifically at funding poor students, there we're coming up with a figure of around about 30 billion that's required every year, but NISFAS has 6 billion. So you can see there's a huge gap. Now in terms of the funding that has been made available this year, we have supported all students from second year upwards, but those first year students we weren't able to provide funding for all of them. And that's one of the reasons why we get the reports about students not getting funds. There is also a challenge, and I think NISFAS can talk to that as well, at the institutional level in the financial aid offices that is being addressed. In terms of internationalisation of higher education, I mean, this is really specifically because many of our institutions are getting into relationships with other institutions in Africa and the rest of the world, and there is this increasing idea of having joint degrees that are taught by the institution here and the institution overseas. And we do not have a policy that covers that. We don't have a policy that deals with how we finance that, how we understand that, what that relationship should be, and so on. And so that's what this is really about, trying to understand what does it mean to have degrees that are taught jointly, who confers the degree, does this person get a degree that's conferred here and overseas? Those kinds of issues are being dealt with, and the funding of that as well. Then the challenges. I think the challenges are big, but we are working on a number of them. I will ask Dr. van Staden to talk about the new regulations. That's the one area that we put in place to assist us with the challenges as we go forward. But then also we are looking at a number of other processes in terms of meeting these. One of these is around the training of council members. So there's a program being put in place at the moment in terms of the training of new council members, but also working with the universities and the council forum to ensure that councillors know what it is that they ought to be doing. The other issue then is around the processes for doing investigations at institutions. So we have to work with the institutions, we have to ask them to do investigations, and at the end of the day then we have to look at those. And maybe I can then look directly at the issue of CUT and what has happened there. the department does not agree completely with the findings of the judge, and we will be appealing that. But I think that we must understand that it was a particular interpretation as well of the Higher Education Act. The issue that the minister didn't have the right to dissolve the council. Now, in our understanding of the Act and the way it's always being interpreted before, it was that when the minister takes over the functions of council, what that actually, the effect of that, is to dissolve the council. However, the wording in the Act does not say that the council is dissolved. Now, this idea that you would take over the functions of a council for a year or maybe 2 years and the council would just sit somewhere and then later come back and take over the institution, to us is not a sensible idea, but it's something that we have to test. But it may be that if this interpretation is taken as a legal interpretation, we have to change the Act to make it absolutely clear that if there's a dysfunctional council and that council, the functions of that council have been overtaken, then the council must be dissolved. There can be no other reasonable interpretation of that. We are aware of the situation on the ground at CUT, and we are aware that there are some major concerns from staff at CUT who are feeling intimidated and continue to feel intimidated, and this is something that we obviously are concerned about because of the ruling. However, we are going to have to deal with this through the legal processes, and as this unfolds, we will keep the portfolio committee appraised of the situation. In terms of the next question, which is around the fraudulent qualifications, it is still happening, but we don't think it's necessarily at the institutional level. We were aware when the University of Zululand was taken over that there was a major problem there. That has now been stemmed. Our section believes that there are fraudsters who sell and develop fraudulent qualifications for various people, buy them, and then they bring them to us. And sometimes they are based on real qualifications. So we do see a lot of the thing looks real, but there are certain pointers which we are aware of that help us understand when things are fraudulent. Most of the fraudulent qualifications we get are actually foreign qualifications and not local, because the local ones, we know very well what they look like, whose signatures should be there, what are the little markings and so on. So they don't get through the process very easy, but most of the ones that we're finding are fraudulent, are foreign. In terms of this, the process at the moment is that as soon as we pick up a fraudulent qualification, that is sent to both the institution from where it came from, it's sent to a professional body in relation to making them aware of it, and then it's also sent to the police services to follow up so that those are taken there. The challenges in terms of student behavior, I think that is an important one. We haven't highlighted it here, but again, there is a process at the moment for developing a leadership program for students, which will be held later in the year once the new SLCs are in place. But this issue is something that we're going to have to take up and understand better, and I think it is one of those things that we need to put on the on our radar in a very big way. In terms of the accountability rehemus, I think here the institutions, I can name the institutions. We didn't put it in the report because often one doesn't do that necessarily, but this is specifically related, I think, to capacity in the institutions themselves as well in terms of putting it forward. But the in terms of the submissions for the space issues, most institutions were about a week late in their submissions. But there were some that had really late submissions, and these were, and I'm going to indicate them, the University of Cape Town, University of Fort Hare, University of Johannesburg, and Durban University of Technology. Those are the ones that have submitted, but they were very late. And then there's one that still has not submitted, and that is WITS. We have been in constant communication with the institutions requesting these submissions, but you can see that when we have late submissions, it does mean there's a backlog in terms of the issues. But this is not indicating the quality of the submissions, because one of the reasons why we really need to have early submissions is because we've got to verify the data, and verifying the data is also a big issue, and for some institutions that it takes more time than with others. So that's the issue around the data. In terms of the next question, I think, which is around the Foundation for Teacher Education and the colleges, this program includes the expansion to colleges. So many of those PhDs and master's students that we've got in the system at the moment, we're earmarking as possible human resources for that expansion. And the process there at the moment is that the one on the Sia Bushra campus, which is going to be opening in 2013, there's a process there of working with the University of Johannesburg, utilizing University of Johannesburg's accredited program, and they are also working with the development of the staff on that particular campus. A similar process will be set up as we look for other campuses. We're currently in discussions with the KZN department and the Eastern Cape department, as well as Limpopo, around some of the ex-campuses there, to bring them online for the development of this. I think that does take me through all of these. I'd like to hand over to Dr. van Staden to do the two reports, the one on the regulations and the other one on the National Information and Application Service. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Volker. Very quickly on the regulations, we found from our role as a monitoring and evaluator of processes and practices within the universities that our mechanism is not actually providing us with enough information and a good quality of information. And therefore we have revised the regulations on annual reporting of the universities in consultation with the universities to provide us with a sufficient mechanism, efficient mechanism to actually to analyze those reports and to understand what's going on in our higher education institutions. And that mechanism has already brought a lot of issues like governance to the forefront, which we are now unable to monitor. And I'm so glad the gentleman that asked the question is now back with regard to the National Information Application System Service. I think the media is partially to blame because there's a confusion within the public. What's the differences between registration, application, admission, and selection? We have from the start advocated that this is an application system, not a registration system, not an admission system. We are not taking over the admissions process of a university or the registration process of the university. What we are suggesting is to provide access into our universities, that we centralize an application system. So what that does entail is that it will standardize the fees within the system. Instead of a student applying to 7 universities and each time has to pay an amount of approximately 350 rand, he can go through the central application system by paying 100 rand, apply to 7 universities or 7 programs in a university and pay one fee. So from the services that we provide to the student, it makes it more easier for them to know what kind of opportunities is available across the 23 universities. From the university side, what it means is they have an enrollment plan. They have to fill their places. So what this service will provide to them
is an indication where there are places available, and then from our side, what we are putting in place, and we are targeting January, February, March of next year, that when those places are not filled, and we have a lot of applicants that realize that, oh, I can go and study at a university, but they don't queue at a UJ, but then they phone this number, and then we redirect them and say, listen, what do you want to study? Okay, engineering. There's still some places available in University A, B, C, D. So that kind of process, and that's a phase one. It's a starting point where we're starting. The whole conceptualization and implementation of the process is in phases. We hope in our plan that we will a full implementation system by 2015. What we are doing is we're targeting institutions that are well-functioning, that can and want to come onto this service, and then help build the capacity of other institutions where this kind of system and service is not very, very functional. Thank you.
Yeah, maybe just last one, Chet, is that on the student behavior, our humble request is that the engagement with students should always look at reinforcing the culture of teaching and learning in the institution. It's quite disturbing in some instances where you find that some politicians actually use engagement with students for political purposes. And in the end, that serves only the purpose of being disruptive, you know, in the institution. I think it's something that you actually need to pay attention to as portfolio committee and make such humble requests out there to the public as well as from politicians, you know, across. Because when that happens, the casualty becomes the academic enterprise of an institution. And we can't afford that, taking into consideration the billions that are being invested by the country into these institutions.
Jefferson, the universities that are not doing well, I just want to understand, is it financial reasons, funding, less funding or whatever that is causing that, or the students not doing well in their studies? Is there any way that the universities can assist our students? He says metric, umganwam, funigo with the engineering, nam selfun with the engineering. But e university was who says an outi tolluti, yempela, yonantela, optimani landeleleo, abangan sees an outika. Awuzame okunye ngoba mhlawumbe lokhu ngeke ukusize, or is just enrollment ukuthi nje as long as enrolle so many students akunankinga.
No, thank you very much. There are varying reasons for some universities not to do well. But normally the most critical areas, it's where there is very weak and inefficient governance and management. Because in that kind of a situation, it becomes quite difficult even to mitigate the challenges that are objectively obtained within a particular institution. And in some instances, it's the question of mismanagement of funds, which creates huge problems in those. but we do come across that in some instances. So the question of governance as well as leadership in its totality is quite important and central in determining whether an institution would do well or not, amongst other things. Students at times, they do enroll for courses that they are not capable of doing or that they never intended doing. That is why we are working quite very hard on the campaign for career guidance and counseling, so that when students are applying, they apply for programs or courses that they have potential to do and they have interest in doing those programs. So we're looking at addressing that, and we are working in collaboration with universities as well as other sectors within the post-school education and training, including the private sector as well, and a number of quality assurance bodies.
Yes, I'm on another issue altogether. It's not a follow-up from what I said. Chairperson, in as much as today so we are on quite a lot of pause, we did, what I'm going to say is not that we expected it today, but I'm just letting Chair that we'll find a way in future that on how we deal with these things. When you look at the universities, what is going on in the universities around, what is happening in Tunisia, in UK, Sudan, and whatever, I think, Chairperson, in future, we need to find a way where, as a portfolio committee, we can be kept abreast of the things that happen in our universities. I'm saying that, Chairperson, because as public representative, at any time, you're just called just to say, what is happening in Tunisia? You find that as a member of parliament, really, we are not sure of how to respond to the public. I'm just leading chairs to say, in one way or the other, maybe in future when there are these strikes and uprisings in the university, just to have sort of an update that can come in a form of a fly, a paper or whatever, for the members of the committee to be kept abreast, for them to be able to respond to whatever situation they are faced with when they go out there.
Let me take the last one. We still have got two programs to go and another presentation to take.
Okay, Chair, let me wave.
On this issue of CUT, the committee at one moment requested to get the response of the University Council to the allegations or to the report of the administrator. Now, I don't know whether the department now, after because the matter went to court, has got access to these three reports. The KPMG report, Advocate Lopez report, and the council response to the assessor's report. We really need these three reports so that if there is anything that attracts public accountability, we can be activated. We want to know whether the department does have that. Do you really now have those three reports? If you have, so that we can get that from you. If you don't have, or if you have, you don't want to provide, we will understand why. So that we could, in terms of the Constitution, request, instruct the registrar of CUT to provide those reports to the committee. Anything that has got to do with public funds, it is our responsibility to know about. It's not a favor. It's our responsibility. So let's get to know if those are there, they must come very soon so that we can schedule a discussion on CUT. It was the principal of CUT invited us even in an article titled Authoritarianism in academia, you know, to take note of certain issues. The last point will be about legislation. If there are bills before us, if there are issues that are crucial, that are excluded, then we must be engaged so that we as a committee perhaps could request Parliament, not the National Assembly in fact, to give us permission to revisit specific provisions in existing legislation under review so that we can deal with those matters. When we went to Mangosuthu University of Technology, it was heartbreaking to hear that they don't even have a student center. When it is raining, students run from open space into lecture halls. That is disruptive. So those are some of the issues that we think need urgent attention. So you must inform the committee about the projects that you would have approved after the bids that have been submitted by the universities. I think we can go to program 4.
Thank you, Chairperson. Program 4, this quarter, during the first quarter, had four performance targets, indicators. First one had to do with the development of curriculum program for the National Senior Certificate for Adults. The second one had to do with the drafting the report which shows accountability of how we use donor funding, and the third and fourth had to do with the surveys which we must conduct, one in adult education and training centers, as well as the last one, the surveys we conduct in FET colleges. The report was indeed drafted, and it is complete, which indicates how we have used donor funding to support the expansion of the business management systems in colleges, how we have used donor funding in order to review some of the subjects, and also to review the qualification as per the instruction of the minister, and also how we have used donor funding to expand student support in some of the selected FET colleges. We have further conducted the surveys, and the return rate from FET colleges was 100%. All FET colleges returned the surveys with an indication of what the enrollment was at the time. And also we have received all the surveys which we have received from other learning centers have exceeded the target, which indicates that in many instances some new adult learning centers continue to be established by the provincial departments of education. And therefore, it means that our baseline when we do the same next year, it will be on the basis of the response rate of this year. The target that we were unable to achieve is developing the curriculum development for the National Senior Certificate for Adults. However, in this regard, we are going to continue to do the work because the major challenge was the availability of funding. And in order to deal with, because it is not an option, we have to resort to, one, to instigate this project, this development of the curriculum as part of the function of the department with carry-through effect. We submitted a bid to National Treasury in order to ensure that we constantly have money for curriculum review, curriculum development, and curriculum support. And at the same time, as part of the outcome, adult education is part of some of the key objectives and outcomes of the
National Skills Development Strategy 3, and then in that respect we also then submitted a bid so that in the meantime the NSF, so that we are able to achieve this target, the NSF can consider supporting the project while we are still engaging with the National Treasury through the bid. And in the same breath, through our international relations branch, we engage with the Irish Aid to see if we cannot source funding in order to support the development of curriculum and system preparation for this project. Some of the notable achievements done in the department, as indicated in the presentation, go to the successful implementation of the first trimester engineering studies examination, and which occurs between April and May, and then the monitoring and support workshop to support particularly the provinces, and in this case the focus was on the Eastern Cape. And as you would recall that the department is slowly getting into grip in terms of moving the function from the FET function from the provincial offices to the national office. Part of the step of doing that is to gradually ensure that the principals of colleges account to the department. And to that effect, the principals of colleges have entered into performance agreement, which have then been signed by the department, which then the department now has got to monitor. And at the time when we wrote the report, 42 colleges have submitted, but to date, 49 have submitted, and only the East Cape Midlands College has not submitted, and which is what we are going to follow. Then, in conclusion, Chair, the issue of human capacity, which is indicated as a challenge, is pervasive, basically. It has got to do with specializations. And if you lead subject or curriculum development, and then those projects or those initiatives must be led by specialists in those fields. However, in the absence of specialists, we use part of the department's budget and some of the donor-funded projects in order to hire expertise from outside to assist us with regard to curriculum development. I think, Chair, in short, that is the report from the program for with regard to the performance in the first quarter.
Members can have working tea. Can we, in the effort of managing time, go to program 5? I'm realizing that we don't have time for the second presentation. I think I'm forced to.
If you look at both documents, the one that we are referring to earlier, there's the one with the template and the one with the presentation. The one with the template provides key information in respect of indicating that the branch is responsible for 3 strategic objectives and 7 performance indicators. The first strategic objective, it has 3 performance indicators. The first one of which is the one that deals with the number of artisans found competent nationally. The annual target is 10,000. It's also linked to the performance agreement of the minister with the president. And the target for the quarter is 3,000. The output for the quarter is 2,315, which shows a shortfall of 685. Which we're not overly concerned with. Because if we look at our performance the past 2-3 years, so going back to the 5 years, we've had notable achievements in respect of meeting our targets. In fact, we've actually exceeded the PME targets of minister of 10,000 per annum, even the previous financial year, to the extent that we have to revise that target up from 10,000 to 12,000 for this current year. So we're not overly concerned. But also the second point is that they're cyclical. The numbers differ from one quarter to the next. You realize that, for instance, at the beginning of the year, the last quarter of the year, there's always a huge jump because of the enrollment numbers at that stage. Going on, links to this very first strategic objective as well, is the number of audits conducted in CETA accredited trade testing centers. The annual target is 20. For the quarter, it's 5. We're overachieving in this regard because we've done 7 for this quarter. And the third performance indicator next to this strategic objective is one that relates to the percentage of CETAs implementing NSDS 3 with approved service level agreement. Now the target is 100% because we expect all 21 CETAs to comply. And the success rate in this regard for this quarter is 76%. Because 16 out of 21 of those CETAs performed. Moving on, Chairperson, we move to the next strategic objective, which has two indicators. That relates to the number of CETA strategic plans analyzed in relation to the sector skills plans and approved, underlying approved. And the target there is 21. Because we expect all 21 CETAs to be in compliance. Now, all 21 CETA strategic plans have been analyzed, but what then remains outstanding is an approval by the DG first, then finally by the minister, but also consistent with the directive given by the portfolio committee when the CETAs had their first visit this year, wherein the committee indicated clearly that you do not accept presentation of strategic plans that are not approved. The next performance indicator in this regard, Chair, is the number of NSDS implementation reports. Now, every quarter, each CETA submits an implementation report to demonstrate how they're implementing the NSDS 3. We have received the report for this quarter, which has been analyzed and finalized, and it's en route to be sent off by the DG as well. The third strategic objective has two indicators, performance indicators. It relates to the National Skills Fund. The first indicator in that regard is the number of projects supported by the National Skills Fund. For the quarter is 224. And the achievement rate for the quarter is 80. Now, during these very same periods, the NSF had to change its focus in response to the call made by not only the minister, but also the president, that of growing and developing the capacity of the American education and training sector. In that regard, the branch then needs to start work with all 50 colleges to ensure that we were able to invest in the expansion of their various programs, the NCV program, NATED program, enrollments, learnerships, and skills program. That work has not been included in this 80 that was speaking about. And then the last performance indicator in this regard is with regard to the number of learners trained in NSF projects. You will realize that for the quarter is 3,220, but we've indicated the output as 4,153. It's a bit confusing because these are learners that are supposed supposed to take to do training for the whole year. And therefore, it will be very difficult in the very first quarter to indicate that kind of an output has been achieved. So that 4,000 remains amber, simply because that is the number that is in training as we speak. I want to stop the service. Thank you very much.
The two programs together so that we can save time.
Point of understanding, Jefferson. Arbet is adult education also. If I were to start with learning under Arbet, can Arbet take me to a degree, or is it just for the reading and writing and signing my name?
Thank you, Chair. This is a question for both Program 4 and 5. Now, it gives an indication of the achievements and notable achievements, but something that I do miss in this whole thing, and this is an issue that I have been going on about for quite some time, is the outstanding certificates within the FET sector as well as the CETA sector. And I think it's very, I don't think one can really say that you have achieved something that an examination has been administered if the end result is not given to the student, because that's in effect what he needs when he has completed the examination successfully. So the process there, I can't see that it has been completed. An examination is completed once the certificate has been issued. So could I please just have the department's comments on why still are there people till today with certificates outstanding for up to 3 years?
I also wanted to go to the issue of certification, but as it has been posed then, I'll then ask Chairperson, one of the challenges that we always get is that these FET colleges do not submit in due time, and it keeps on coming again, and that has got a huge impact on the future of the learners that are there when we delay the issue of certificates. If it's one of the major problems, really, what is it that the department is doing to unblock that? And, yeah.
Money.
Thanks, Chair. This might be a comment, but the intention is for purposes of attracting a comment as well from the department. When I listened to Program 4, my view has been that it is emphasizing provision of a national senior certificate, and then it has less emphasis on trying to deal with illiteracy in our country. So I would like the department to comment in that score. And then on the last program, I would have loved if there is an indication as to how CETAs are going to assist in the development of skills, particularly with regard to learnerships that are helpful. Thanks.
I have
that particular light, and unless we ask, we may not be told. It's like administrators come and go quietly, whether we're achieving or not achieving what they were meant to do, we don't just get to know. Can we be briefed as to what is the status now, insofar as those that had the administrators in place is concerned, whether the situation is still the same, or what numbers are we talking about, and so on. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'll start with a general question. Well, when we visited the FET colleges, clearly remember Buffalo City One, the numbers there were going down instead of going up, which concerned us. I'm just trying to ask a general question. Is there any change in that, broadly speaking? Because one of the learners to go to FET is rather than universities. On your page 26, could be your experience, I was sleeping or something. The bullet says the budget of the grant is negatively disproportionate to the interventions that it must make and the services that it must render. If you just could say more about that, maybe that is a call to us as a committee to do something about that. On page 27, the second bullet says several audits were conducted at certain accredited trade test centers. I think that is the 7 out of the 21, and therefore we're still on track. We don't have to be concerned about that. I'll stop there.
When we spoke on learnerships on program 5, it's not a question on my part. When will we get a report about learnerships, internships, or apprenticeships that are under government institutions? National departments, provincial departments, municipalities, public entities, and state-owned enterprises. Let's get a report on this. We want to hear whether we are walking the talk as the state. Let's get a report in the future, in the next 3 months, about internships, learnerships, apprenticeships by the state, national departments, provincial departments, municipalities, state-owned enterprises, public entities, so that we can zero in on those that do not actually offer this and know that they are defying our national imperatives. We need to know something about that. That's one point that came to mind when you mentioned that the department has got 87 interns. So it sparked interest as to what about other departments. Let's answer and then proceed to the next presentation.
Thank you very much. CETAs and the outstanding certificate. I think there we have got serious challenges that actually prompted us to look at the legislation and make amendments accordingly. Now the training system in CETAs, it's mainly driven by private providers. Now what is confronting then now is that some of the private providers that were in business when the learners were in the training and finished without proper certification
those private providers are no longer in business. That's challenge number one. That the status, together with the department, are working seriously to address. And the second problem area is that you find in some sectors, I'll single out perhaps for now, services sector for instance, the discrepancy in the system. What is reflected in the system, it's not accompanied with the availability of records per every individual learner who is claimed to have undergone a particular system of training. So those are the glitches that the sitters and the department are working on. And I suppose the problem basically is emanating from the fact that the system of examination has never been systematized such that it would be able to keep appropriate and relevant records on continuous basis. So that is the gap that we are trying to rectify through the interventions that the department is making now. So it's historical. We are trying to address that because it doesn't give a satisfactory answer to somebody who's waiting for a certificate. We are trying hard to fix it. We have seconded officials from the department to work with these sitters on the ground, on the field, construct what is constructable, and work out and explore numerous mechanisms to resolve the problem. Now, in regard to Rafiti College, report 191, there are no backlogs. Certificates are issued, you know, on a continuous basis, and the target date was actually met of the 31st of July, as was indicated in the parliamentary question. Now, in regard to NCV, this is a curriculum-related program. It's not just confined to exams as the exams and certification. One, the program started in 2007. Now, one of the gaps that were picked up in the system, it was in regard to consolidation. What do I mean? One, a student would register for NCV2. You do 7 subjects. You fail 4, you pass 3, you go to the next level. The 4 you have failed, you add it on the programs that you have to do for NCV level 3, 7 subjects, plus 4, it's 11. Now, the more you fail, the more you abandon, you are given a responsibility for more subjects to complete, which becomes an unaccomplished million mission. It's difficult to accomplish it quite, you know, easily. Now, what has been happening is that as you proceed to the next level, having not passed the other subjects, the system was not able to consolidate as you go through the system up to level 4 and you finish. So what you did in 2007 doesn't get consolidated with what you did in 2008. What you did in 2008 with not consolidated with what you did in 2009. That's the problem that we actually found. We then had to work on this with Umalusi as well as the State Information Technology Agency, which is actually providing the electronic data in managing the system. So the challenge is in regards to that. But in instances where there have been a smooth flow in regards to passing an accreditation of subject, there hasn't been a problem and there is no problem. So the certification is actually going ahead. What then? We have to do and agree with Umalusi because there's been this backlog. So the tariffs for producing, you know, a certificate had to be looked at, and the council had to approve that, of which they had to work on it. And the good news is that that has been attended to. So not later than the 31st of October, as per the latest engagement that we had with Umalusi, this is going to be addressed, the backlog part. But this is how it has actually developed. It's in relation to consolidation, which is dating back to 2007. And we've put all the measures to actually address that, because it's not explaining, you know, to a person who's waiting for a certificate. And we took full responsibility for that and worked quite very hard to minimize and eventually eliminating that problem. That's where the state of the situation is at the present moment. Thank you.
I would just like to take some of the questions and we will share the load with my colleague. There was a question as to whether or not can an able take me to a degree. Yes, it can. The qualification is designed in such a manner that it is it culminates into what is called the GETC, the General Education and Training Certificate, which is at level 1 of the NQF, and then after which then you can take the subjects for matric. When we go to this, when we talk about the enrollment in adult education and training centers, the majority in the last survey, the number of the learners who are doing the ABET level 1, 2, 3, and up to 1, 2, and 3, up to 4 is just over 250,000. But there is a huge number of youths who have a grade 9, who have a grade 9 or a GTC, but they can no longer be able to be afforded an opportunity by the schooling system, and therefore they go to these adult learning centers to do and qualify for a matric and sit for examinations, for matric examination. In other words, the old senior certificate, which is phasing out in 2014. Now, if you were to take, therefore, adult education levels 1, 2, 3, and 4, for a GTC, and you are ready to take the grade 10, 11, 12 examination, and with a progression if you meet the requirements to do higher certificate diploma or degree studies, if you pass your senior certificate, national senior certificate at the requisite level. Now, your challenge with adult education becomes when you go to and do adult education in institutions or agencies that are either private or not accredited. Because in that way, there is no quality assurance which says that the subject combination must be so that you are able to, while you gain your literacy, but you are also able to progress. The other question had to do with the emphasis of the department on developing the National Senior Certificate vis-a-vis trying to eliminate the scourge of illiteracy in the country. In terms of, I would just like to respond and say, in terms of the report which we have been citing for quite a while, the statistics of which needs updating, is that by 2007, there were just under 1 million young people who had a grade 9 qualification but did not have matric. And then flowing from that, the minister then entered into an agreement with the president to say he has got to develop a qualification which is going to cater for this cohort, those students who, while having a grade 9, but do not have a qualification which is at least equivalent to a matric, which can take you to post-matric education. And this NASCA talks to that kind of a target. And secondly, I would also like to say to members, there is a huge injection which is made to basic education to deal in all manner of ways with literacy through the Karakuta project. And we are post-school because we deal with those learners who never got a chance to go to school, who also might have fallen out of the schooling system, or who also might have been finding themselves at work or have progressed with their education to the point that they need post-schooling education. And therefore, the mandate of the department is that while we deal with literacy issues, but the literacy program of government, the Karakuta program, is located as such in the Department of Basic Education. And however, we continue to carry that function as part of our post-school provision. The issue relating to outstanding results because of some colleges not submitting. And this time, we have decided that part of the performance agreement of the principal has got to be principal taking accountability of examination. In other words, if the institution has not submitted the adequate documentation which provides evidence that a student has done tests, in other words, an integrated continuous test at the level of the institution, which has been in many instances the cause of what is called the outstanding results phenomenon. And then the principal must take accountability for that, because it's something which we cannot continue to have. The decline in enrollment, particularly at Buffalo City, decline in enrollment is not a national trend. It may be peculiar to that college because of the manner in which the institution is either board, managed, or governed. But members would recall that last year, during the last financial year, we projected 350,000 headcount in the system. However, we achieved 430,000. And we continue again this year to project 550,000, and which I'm certain we are going to be able to achieve given the funding resources under the control of the DHET and given the new institutional landscape where we have the NSF, the voted funding and the CITAS and colleges ensuring that the system expands. The decline is peculiar to the institution. Many institutions, as we speak, indicated that they, in actual fact, enrolled far beyond what Program 5 conditional grant would be able to cover. And as a result, in order to expand program offering, as my colleague has indicated, we have used the resources from the NSF to ensure that the college sector expands, and in order to ensure that the demand for education and training is side, I need to indicate when we say the budget is negatively disproportionate to the mandate of the branch, like the department, this is an inheritance from the old deal, where the budget of Program 4 was skewed towards the schooling and not towards tourists, both at the level of the province and at the level of the department. And now we have to, as we bid for additional funding, which is what we are doing, we have to bid in such a manner that the mandate that the branch carries to support this institution is supported both at the level of funding and at the level of the human resource capacity that we have to deploy to support the institutions to perform at the level at which they are supposed to perform. At the moment, the mandate is huge, but the budget is not proportional, directly proportional to the mandate. And that's what I meant. My colleague will take the issue in relation to the institutions and our administration.
Thank you, Dr. Mashabo. Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members of parliament, ladies and gentlemen. If I may just quickly also just dovetail on what Dr. Mashabo had indicated, but also pay particular focus to the college in question, which is Buffalo City, as I'm aware that the members of parliament were there. We have engaged the college in particular. Yes, there is a growth in sector generally, but we expect all of them to grow. And to that effect, we are engaging the college in terms of their enrollment planning to ensure that in the last trimester, because members of parliament were there in June, but there was also an opportunity for the college to register again for the last trimester to ensure that they put mechanisms in place to be able to increase those enrollments. And certainly again next year, so within this financial year, they will still indicate a growth with our assistance in that regard. And Chairperson, I'm going to be very brief. In terms of the last question that was asked on the status of the colleges in relation to the administration, just need to state that currently the colleges that are under administration are Ikhala Efete College, which is in the Eastern Cape, King Sabata Galindyabo Efete College, also in the Eastern Cape, Coastal Efete College in KZN, Tshwane North College in Gauteng, Mthashana Efete College, which will soon be placed under administration as well, in KZN, and Motheo Efete College in the Free State. I would like to state that in regard to Motheo Efete College, this was the first college to be placed under administration, and it was placed by the Free State government. In terms of the impact that this is having on the institutions, I need to point out that placing the institutions under administration is the last resort for the department. It is after all possible interventions have been explored and have been exhausted, and there's been no other alternative but to put in an administrator to restore stability in the institutions. In terms of the impact, in the short space of time, because as much as I'm counting these institutions have really been placed under administration recently. There's none of them that has been under administration for more than a period of a year. But I need to indicate that very briefly, in terms of the impact, we have seen in terms of the governance and leadership, to a great extent that has been restored. If I can just make an example, in some of the institutions you had college council members who were even sitting in supply chain management committees and becoming part of operational processes of the colleges. We then had to ensure that we remove them. And therefore, in terms of governance and leadership, you don't have that happening anymore in these institutions. It's one of the things that we had to quickly come in and correct, and that has been done. It's just one of the examples I'm citing in terms of the governance. In terms of the finances, which is key, we've heard this morning how the department is making huge investments in these institutions. Now, if these are in a state of chaos and this maladministration, as it has been in these instances, where there's been financial mismanagement, as it has been, resulting in them being placed under administration, we have managed to arrest the situation where, in terms of finance, it was a situation of free for all. Need to state that as part of this process, because placing in an administrator, just placing an administrator in an institution, but without placing the administrator with the required support, even that on its own is a challenge. Members will agree that one person may find this difficult to do. But in all these instances, we've placed the administrator, we've also placed qualified chief financial officers, many of which are chartered accountants, and we've done this with the help of SICA. So in this regard, we have tightened the security and the responsibilities and the reporting in relation to the finances. And again, this has been done in the short period of time of the placement of the administrators. And core to this, I need to state, in all these institutions that have been placed under administration, core to this, what the department has managed to do was to restore teaching and learning. I need to state that in all of these colleges, affecting many of their campuses, it was a case where there was no longer teaching and learning taking place, where strikes were the order of the day every day, to an extent that even the lecturers were not even coming to colleges, or if they did come, they were coming for short periods, making guest appearances and then leaving. So to this extent, we have managed to restore teaching and learning. And finally, honorable members, through you, Chairperson, we have developed a turnaround strategy. Each and every administrator has a turnaround strategy. We monitor this and the progress on a monthly basis and on a quarterly basis, where we make quarterly assessments, because we understand that an administrator and placing an administrator is a short-term intervention, but that which is aimed at quickly bringing about stability in the institution. And through this monitoring process that we've put in place, we have managed to do that. So in response to your question, yes, indeed, we are beginning to see the impact, and certainly through you, Chairperson, we will devise means to say, how do we report to yourself and to the members in this regard? Thank you very much.
Lastly, Chair, the other important component, if I may just add, was to standardize in some of these FET colleges, recruitment and selection, because in some instances, employment would be effected without any job description that has been developed. Just get people out of the street, come, here is a job. And that's what has been obtaining in some of them, things that are really unacceptable. And these things caused a strain in the budget of these, you know, FET colleges. That's just one aspect I thought perhaps it would be important to add.
We comment the appointment of those child accountants from SICA, and I'd like to say that you must attend to the issues raised by the AG that some of the colleges are not cooperating, they are not even auditing their books. Let's attend that aspect and raise that with us already.
Task teams in September 2011
That report has been sent to the CHE for advice as is required by the Higher Education Act, and they have provided advice to the Minister. In November last year, a project management team was appointed by the department to start this process after the report. The report was the baseline on which we are working. A steering committee has been set up to provide oversight, and their representatives on that from various levels. The diagram just indicates the structure of that management of the project. In terms of progress, where we are was during the discussions around the task team reports, a number of different sites were identified as possible sites, and from that the steering committee and the management team looked at those sites. 18 sites were visited and assessed according to criteria that were developed, and recommendations were made on the seats. Once the recommendations had been made on the seats, there was consultation with the president and the premiers of the provinces, as well as with the Minister of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. On the 5th of July, the president did announce the intended seats to be in the centre of Kimberley and at the Lowveld Agricultural College in Mpumalanga. In terms of progress, there is a development framework which the Minister launched last Thursday and is being published in the Government Gazette today. The development framework, I think, was sent through to the Portfolio Committee already, but if people would like to get copies of it, you can write to the email address, which is the new universities at dhet.gov.za, and we will send you a copy of that. In terms of the processes, we have also identified the legal processes that need to be undertaken and completed, and there is a communication strategy. The first newsletter is going out today, and you should get a copy of that newsletter on the email. In terms of the ongoing sub-projects, there are a number of different sub-projects that we've set up in order to ensure success. And these include, first, linked to the idea that we have to develop an academic architecture, a preliminary PQM, that would be used for design purposes in terms of understanding space needs and physical planning and costing. Academic focus group, looking at the overall academic architecture and enabling the planning for the start-up and the initial programs that will be offered, as well as a longer-term framework related to that. Institutional and organizational policies and guidelines for the new university. Clearly, the new university is not going to be able to set itself up if we just get an interim council and say, do it yourself. So what we've done is put together a highly expert team with experience from across the system that's looking at best practices and is developing a whole range of policies a university will need in order to operate effectively. And included in that is a first draft of an institutional statute that interim council can then look at and make decisions over and utilize. The land assembly process, this is very important because the seats cannot be gazetted until we've got that going through, and there is progress there in terms of work with the Department of Public Works, and at the local level with the department, the provincial departments of public works, with the mayoral committees in each of those particular towns, and with the urban planners and town planners in those towns as well. The issue of the stakeholder relations and change management that we have to deal with. There's also work stream on that. And then also a key set of competencies for the interim council so that when the interim council is selected, it will be a council that has the right kind of competencies to ensure success of these institutions. The Sea Bush for Campus development is ongoing at the moment anyhow, and it will be part of the new university in the longer term. Tenders have already been advertised. through the website. There have been initial 18 tenders appeared on the 13th of August with a closing date of the 31st of August, but further tenders will obviously come through that website as well, and that website will also contain information about the project. We have the email contact and comments that can be sent to this, comments in relation to the development framework and so on. A feasibility study has been undertaken and has been presented to Treasury. There are preliminary budget and cash flow statements which show the operating expenditure and capital expenditure for the building of the university. We have to understand that we understanding these institutions from the one hand in terms of the development of the organizational policies and practices and the people that will have to run it, and on the other hand, the infrastructure development that may have to happen. The university can clearly begin with students and with people and policies before we have built the entire new structure, particularly given that the sites that have been selected do already have some infrastructure on them. The preliminary cash flows and budgets for the two show that the amount of funding, if we were to go the full loan process in terms of developing the new infrastructure, we would require around 16.5 billion by 2018. So that's longer than the current MTEF period. In terms of timelines, we provided a set of timelines in terms of the work that's being undertaken at the moment. We expect the verification studies to be completed by October, and at that particular point then we'll be ready for hopefully the gazetting of these institutions. So we expect the institutions to be gazetted in towards the end of October, November, and at that particular point the universities will be established, although they obviously won't yet have students. In terms of the decisive criteria, the factors around the criteria for the selection of the specific sites, we've provided those. We've also provided a document which you will find here on the table called Recommendations on the Seats of the New Universities, which provide the detailed criteria and also provide an indication of how all the 18 sites were analyzed and how we came to the recommendations that have been made. Obviously, there were national spatial considerations that had to be taken into account, and specifically, we needed to understand the positioning of these universities in relation to the major development corridors and in relation to the major population densities in those two provinces. The spatial processes around frameworks and academic prospects for the two new universities, if we start with the Northern Cape, firstly, there were a number of towns that were investigated, Kimberley, Uppington and Colesberg being the main centres that were investigated, taking into consideration the regional spatial considerations for the Northern Cape. It was felt that Kimberley was the best site, and there are a number of reasons for why it was the best site to host a university for 5,000 full-time equivalent students. And those are all listed in this particular slide. I won't go through them in detail, given the time constraints that we have. But in terms of the city itself, it's important to understand that we looked at a number of different sites in the city. We did look at some at sites that were offered by De Beers out on the outskirts of the city, and those were rejected. One of the reasons, the major reasons being geotechnical and environmental factors, that we weren't willing to take that on. And in the end, the decision was made that this university needs to be a university that's integrated into the city itself. And so it becomes part of a integrated university that will have major impact on the town itself and the development of the town, and therefore from that perspective the work that has been undertaken hand in hand with the Kimberley town planners and the mayor and the council and so on, so that we ensure that this goes forward. One of the key factors here, of course, was that most of the buildings, most of the land in the particular area identified is government-owned in some form or another. It's state-owned land, or it's municipal-owned land, or it's provincially-owned land. And from that perspective, it becomes land that and buildings that can be incorporated with agreements. There is a map which shows the area, the overall area that the university is involved in, and there are also images of the city and those particular areas which help give a look and feel of the institution. In terms of design principles, because this is an integrated city university, it's very important that the design principles consider issues such as the movement and access within the particular area identified, the integration within the city, that there are specific landmarks that are identified as iconic landmarks for the university, that we deal specifically with shared space infrastructure. For example, things like the library and the art gallery and things like that, which are right there, that we can look at having being shared by the community and the institution and look at efficiencies around that. And also, because it's right in the middle of the city, the public spaces and the spaces within it also have to be spaces not only for the university but also for the town. So there are a number of issues around that. The planning itself has led to a focus of an institution that will have three campuses, a northern campus, a central campus, and a southern campus. And the pictures in your diagram show those three campuses in terms of their focus, having different parts to them. The northern campus would be the campus which has administration and academic buildings and a major green areas. But you can see from the design concepts that these are the beginning of the concepts. I've left out many, many of the pictures because we just couldn't even email it. It was so big. But what we can do is provide you with reports with all the different pictures showing what those design principles are at the moment, so you can get an idea of the kind of thinking that's going on. In terms of the academic prospects, we have to take into account both that this is in the Northern Cape and take into account its regional and local environment, but also that the university is a national asset and it must also meet national skills development issues. And from this point of view, we've looked at the Northern Cape to provide inspiration for how we can think about some of the programs that we need to consider. And, you know, obviously there's going to be development over time, but the framework in which we are working is specifically coloured by those potential opportunities. What we've done is we've identified possible study fields of specialization, and these are being looked at by the academic focus groups in order to get more detailed understanding of the framework for the academic architecture that needs to be put in place. But we've also been clear that this is going to be a comprehensive institution. It will offer a program mix of technical and vocational and professional and academic disciplines. We will have a phased approach in terms of introducing the full range of disciplines. We can't think about all of them appearing on day one of the institution, but rather we have to understand how these develop over time. We also understand that if these are going to be real universities, they must have also a high level a niche in terms of postgraduate programs and research, and from that particular point we're identifying specific possible areas that could be become areas of of research in those institutions, and we'll be working from the top and the bottom in order to develop these. So there are a number of possibilities that have already been identified, but that's only going to be crystallized once the work of the academic focus groups are complete. In terms of the University of Mpumalanga, again, we've had to take into consideration the regional structural considerations, and from there we did look at a number of different sites as well. Emaheleni, Secunda, White River, Nelspruit, and Barberton were all considered as possible towns for the seats of the university, but in the end it was decided that Nelspruit would be the seat, and major reasons for that lie in the fact that Nelspruit is in an area which is currently under provided for, but it's also one of the most densely populated areas in Mpumalanga, and as you go up the R40 development corridor, that's a very highly highly populated area. It also sits at the center of a number of development corridors and infrastructural road routes, and from that point of view, it's ideally placed to service the country as a whole and the province itself. So there were also a number of decisive reasons for selection of Nelspruit, which are identified in the list. I'm not going to go through those in detail. You have them in front of you. But it is important to recognize in the end that we had to look in the city of Nelspruit at a number of different possible sites as well. Included in those sites were a site that had been identified by Hall and Sons near the Mombela Stadium, a site where the current TUT has a campus, and there was an additional set of land that a private developer wanted to sell at a fairly high cost. There were also a number of other private pieces of land that had been offered that we looked at, but really were not appropriate. And then, of course, the current Lowveld Agricultural College. In the end, that site was identified as the best possible site to allow for future growth, but also because of its specific location and its current operations, which are all in higher education. The particular programs that are run from that college at the moment are diploma programs at level 6, and they are in a process of trying to get those accredited through the Council on Higher Education. So that also is a decisive factor in terms of thinking about this institution. Another absolutely decisive factor, if you look at the map, is the fact that this is right next to the Agricultural Research Institute in Mpumalanga, and from that particular point of view, it's one that is useful. In terms of the design principles, again, we've looked at the specific location and utilized that. So you will see it's quite different from the others. I'm just going to then look at the academic prospects, and again, looking at academic prospects, we've considered the province and nation together, and we've identified particular fields as well as possible areas of further development. Challenges, obviously the capital investment is a major challenge, and that's something that we are working on. We have put in a major bid to Treasury, and we hope to get support from the portfolio committee for that bid as well. In terms of the issues, there are a number of challenges. We're working on all of them, and we do have a quite extensive risk register that we are keeping up to date in terms of ensuring we can go forward. So the next immediate steps, we have to complete the consultation with affected and interested parties in terms of the PAJA, and that is happening and ongoing now until October. We've got the various aspects of the implementation plan of the two universities. Those should be completed in October, and then gazetting of the actual seats. Once the seats are gazetted and the interim council has been appointed, critical issue will be the employment of the first staff, but we are using the project management team and the various groups that we've got available that will become resources for the interim council to ensure that the institutions are complete. Just in terms of the startup, we expect to have our first students on programs in 2014, as long as the academic process works in relation to getting accreditation and partnership issues dealt with partner institutions. Thank you.
How is the control, in fact,
of measuring that no, we've taken enough from the foreign countries, or it's just let in, until they are more than our South African students?
Last night I bumped into the website www.universities.ac.za. Just to caution the DG, because ultimately it's going to be the one held responsible. The tenders that we're talking about are not issued by the department, are issued by another university. And in terms of the law, you account PFMA in terms of supply chain management and order. And your processes must be in terms of three committees, the specification committee, the evaluation committee, and the bid allocation committee. Have you checked that in the future, the AG or anybody else responsible for this would not say that you have abdicated your power or responsibility? Because it is now, in my view, that building a university on behalf of the Department of Higher Education and Training. And those or that university may not be using the Public Finance Management Act and its regulations and practice notes. Let's just check them.
Just in terms of the different questions around the land issues and zoning, these are being taken into account. We're working very closely at the local level to take those. And most of the land we haven't got a problem with, and it's also one of the reasons why we have chosen those particular sites. In terms of specialization, Dr. Van Garden is going to answer that specific one. In terms of the transfer of the agricultural college, we have already met with the Department of Agriculture at the local level as well, as with the college itself, and we are having a process with them to understand exactly how that will happen. But yes, the intention is that the college as a whole will be transferred to the new university. The next one, in terms of the positioning in relation to Namibia, Botswana, Mozambique and Swaziland, we do have the SADC protocol, which governs foreign students in our institutions, and from that perspective, we're looking at around about a 5% of the students would be foreign students. But we do understand that these institutions are going to be institutions that would attract students from across the borders, and that's something that we'll look at as they develop in their own identity. In terms of the process around the VITS's involvement as part of a project management team, two things to note. One, that the funding that was made available was transfer funding. In other words, it was made available to transfer to universities, but there wasn't a university to transfer the funds to. And from that particular point of view, we needed a university that had a lot of experience in terms of project management, that had done very well in terms of its own infrastructure development, and that met the needs in terms of PFMA regulations. And from that point of view, we also wanted a university that was close to the locality in Pretoria that we could utilize. And from that point of view, we looked at all of those universities that were in Gauteng, and WITS was selected as the most appropriate. There are very strict procurement issues around that, and we have a very strong memorandum of agreement in place that is governing that whole issue. I think that is most of the questions that were asked, and just the one on specialization, Dr. Van Garden. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. We didn't have enough time to actually advocate the specific purpose of these universities, but you are totally correct. We are trying to build unique universities with specific niche markets. And one of the areas, especially in the Northern Cape, we are engaging with DST with regard to the SKA project to understand exactly what kind of skills they need, and then therefore that university will come up known into that area. And then if you seek that kind of skills, then Northern Cape would be your proposed university. With regard to the Nelspruit one, agricultural is very, very evident there, but it's identifying the specific specialization area within the research competencies that we can contribute, not duplicating what any of the other universities are doing, but identifying that kind of research area, and therefore the linkage with the research institute is very, very important.
Let me take this opportunity to thank the DG and the senior management of the department for their presentations. This was our first quarterly assessment. We have not been very intensive, but we have just made a framework as to how we'll be engaging with you going forward. We hope that you are going to give us the documentation that we required. For instance, when a question has been raised as to the admission process of international students, we refer to the protocol. Such documents will then be made available for members to know, so that we must be more intelligent tomorrow when we engage with you on the basis of information. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much. Our next meeting will be Tuesday. Yes, Tuesday. Yes, Tuesday. Tuesday, half past nine, and then we can go home.
Thank you.